Evening, folks, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims for our champions, official champions episode. We had a very good celebration, let's say, after Saturday. We didn't win the game, but we celebrated James Forrest in big style. So I'm joined, as usual, by my two colleagues from Video Celts, Joe McHugh, and James Forrest from the Celtic blog. So we're going to dive right in, and we're going to have plenty of controversial points to talk about and plenty to flesh out and discuss over the next hour or so. So to start with, Saturday's game was a bit of a dour affair overall. I predicted last Monday that James Forrest would score in the game, and he did exactly what I wanted, but none of my other scorers scored. So that ended up being a bit of a damn squib in terms of how the game went onto the 94th minute. But having said that, it was a big celebration for James Forrest at the end of the game when he got that goal for his 16th consecutive season scoring for Celtic. So I'll hand over to James and see what James thought of everything on Saturday. What's your view of Saturday's game?
Perfect ending. Couldn't have asked for a better ending. Couldn't have scripted as good an ending as that. The game was really poor. We won it dreadful, but we never got going. Never really hit the stride that we have in the last few weeks. It would have been a bit of a downer of a day had it not got the ending it got. And that was that was as good a Hollywood ending as you'll ever get. There is a thing in fiction called the Deus Ex Machina. It's the ghost from the machine. It's from stage plays. And what used to happen is whenever the hero got in trouble, a chair would come down from the rafters and lift him to safety. And Stephen King rants about it a lot and says it's one of the worst tricks in fiction, but he's used it himself hundreds of times. And that's what it was like. It was like a Deus Ex Machina ending. You could not have scripted it. You wouldn't have wanted to script it. It would have been too unbelievable. But our club is built on those endings. It was almost a certainty when you think about the whole magic that surrounds our club sometimes. It was a moment of absolute perfection, I thought. A moment of perfection. And what I thought was great about it was that you had 60,000 people who were happy that we'd got a point and happy that we were only going to go home having seen a defeat. But every single one of them was happy for that guy, for that player of yours. That made it special. That made it an amazing moment. It so absolutely deserved it. His whole career, he's been a great servant to the club, and I've been a huge critic at times. But no, that was the ending he deserved. I wouldn't have wanted him to go into the final carrying that kind of pressure. I'm sure he would have done something in the final, but you didn't want him carrying that kind of pressure in it. So it was a fantastic ending for his campaign. And the fans deserved it as well. The club deserved it. There's any way we could have ended the league campaign with a draw. We had a defeat. That would have been terrible, especially at home. So yeah, it was the happy ending we deserved. But it's one of the things that makes our club great. It has moments like that. Just wee fabulous. You couldn't have even imagined this moments. Brilliant.
Yeah, I have to say it was magical is right. That's the correct word for it. We definitely, the fans deserved that at the end of the game, but you just had that feeling it was inevitable. And he has been a massive servant for the club, and he's now our most successful player in terms of what he's won with the club in the modern era anyway. So I'll pass over to Joe and get his thoughts on it. And I just need to apologise. I'm having slight technical difficulties with my sound. So if there's a bit of an echo there, apologies for that. But anyway, Joe, your view on the game on Saturday, what did you think?
It wasn't a great performance, but it doesn't have to be. It was a little reminder to us. In midweek at Aberdeen, everything went well. We were playing fantastic. Forrest was on fire, creating chances, everything worked out, nothing troubles at all at the Tawdry. But St Mirren gave us a bit of a reminder that if you're not on form, if you're below your best, then teams can make it awkward for you. And a special mention for David Dickinson. That was a horrendous refereeing performance. The time waste was out of this world. The St Mirren keeper was injured for 2 minutes early on in the match. Umpteen examples of time wasting, every stoppage, every free kick, every throw-in. Not a word from Dickinson, and at the end of the first half with 1 minute stoppage time. Second half was 5 minutes stoppage time. Later on, watched the FA Cup final, and there was 10 minutes stoppage time at the end of the second half of the FA Cup final. So, it was a stodgy performance of the team, but no concerns whatsoever. If we'd been flying, if we'd been really good, then it might have been a concern going into Hampden. Might be a bit of complacency, but training. Aberdeen are pretty dismal, but they get a template how to play against Celtic. Spoil the game. Don Robertson on mornings. No jeopardy, no yellow cards. Certainly not a red card. So there's plenty of warnings there, but it was a great day. It's probably the warmest day of the year. I don't think we've had many late goals this season, not many late winners. But all in all, it was mission accomplished. A great ending with James Forrest scoring his goal. That's what most people were looking for from Saturday. And the celebrations were standard Celtic celebrations, all went well. And we can look back on that, another title won. Wi-Fi, how my audio is standing up this week, but I'll pass back to you, Eric, for comment.
No problem. I suppose what I want to talk about is the celebration on the Tron Gate on Saturday, and obviously the build-up towards that, because there was, we as bloggers wrote an awful lot about it. We said that the council were totally ill-prepared for this, that it was an absolute disaster. And that the lack of engagement from the council, I mean, James, you fleshed it out big time in a couple of blogs that you wrote, especially with regard to the whole situation with the bins and, you know, if they wouldn't provide bins, what they expect when it came to the rubbish, the lack of organisation when it came to the Orange March, and just the complete inability to facilitate the Celtic fans in any way, shape or form. And to then demonise them afterwards, and that's what happened. The press tried to demonise the Celtic fans afterwards for a few minor incidents. Let's be fair and call a spade a spade. It was a few minor incidents, no more than you get in any standard Saturday night in Glasgow City Centre. And to just highlight those isolated incidents, or incidents, and to try and make it out that the Celtic fans were a violent bunch causing hassle all around the city on Saturday night was a joke. So, James, what's your take on the whole situation?
I thought it was absolutely ludicrous the way it got covered in the aftermath. But it was nothing we didn't expect, because they set the stage for that. They set the stage to give us dogs abuse for it. That's what the whole thing the last week or two has been about. It's been about setting us up to make us look as bad as possible. And I think that a lot of them were hoping there was going to be serious trouble, and there wasn't. There was a bit at George Square, which the Daily Record headlined as if it had been a fight between two groups of fans. What it actually was Orange Marchers throwing stuff at Celtic fans on the way to the game. And the cops having to separate them. But in terms of like widespread disorder, nothing remotely like that happened. I saw some stuff today that suggested that the whole event was over by 6 o'clock. You had large groups of Celtic fans who stayed behind after it to help the council clean up. And when I read that there had been 9 arrests and 6 of them at Tron Gate and 3 of them in the stadium, I thought, what, so 6 arrests of all those thousands of fans? That's mental, right? That you would regard that as a pretty successful event if you were running it as a concert or whatever. But they tried to turn it into, Glasgow had been turned into a battlefield, and there's nothing like that. They had 15 fixed penalty notices. That's probably not even an average Saturday night in Glasgow. And as I said in the piece I wrote about it yesterday, or this morning, if you add up the number of fans who stayed behind, and that number is greater than the number of fixed penalty notices and addresses, then shut the fuck up. I mean, really, if you're going to say that our fans behaved abysmally, right, and that's your proof that there were all these fixed penalty notices, but the number of fans who stayed behind and helped was a greater number than that, then fuck up you and Narnese. Your argument's over. It's a joke, isn't it? Because you can demonise one group, but you won't pay the proper respect to the other one. It's just, it's ludicrous. The whole thing's ludicrous. And the council have had a meeting with Selick about it now, after the fact. Are they wanting to meet with Selick now, after the fact? To do what? To basically say, it's your responsibility, and from now on, it'll be your responsibility. Selick will say, well, that's been your line for the start, so what are we having to meet about? I mean, honestly, it's a joke. It's a joke. They need to properly engage. As I said last week, in one of the articles, one of the great pleasures I've had and being able to have day in this job is being able to travel abroad and see the team. And every single city you go to caters for football fans much better than this one does. Every single week they do it. But when there's a European away game and a big event, they really do well for you. The police presence can look a bit intimidating at times. Madrid, I thought that they kind of got a bit heavy-handed in certain parts in Madrid for no reason. And that day when we were all in the square before the game, and they lined up all the vans and all the cops in a big row, it looked like they were preparing for God knows what. But they were excellent. They never bothered a single supporter. There wasn't any intimidation or harassment or anything. They were just there observing, making sure everything went well. But Glasgow City Council just is a joke. It's ridiculous. It's so backward and idiotic. And it's not even so much. I mean, this isn't just their fans, right? I mean, they didn't do anything organised for the other lot either when they won their solitary COVID title. And I know they couldn't, because it was during COVID. And they were allowed to gather on George Square when they shouldn't have been, because the whole country was in lockdown, right? But I get the distinct impression that if they ever found themselves in a position, they would get treated like shit exactly the same way. It's almost as if the Scottish Parliament and the Council don't like football fans. They've done everything they can to make life hard for football fans in the last few years. Like these parking exclusion zones around the three stadiums. They're ridiculous. Okay, I know that some of the residents are like, you know, all these cars parked on the streets and we kind of get in and out and all that. And that's fair enough, right, on the wee side streets and all that. But on main roads, and all that, you're not allowed to park. I mean, it's the cup final at the weekend, right? Now, my dad doesn't get about very well, right? So he's got to walk. If he where he parks his car all the way to Hampden, and then all the way around Hampden if he's got one of the stupid seats. That's away in the other end of the ground. That's just insane. There's no need for that. There's no reason for that. Because they don't want cars parking within, a mile of the ground? That's just pathetic. It'd be different if we had a public transport system that could handle that number of supporters, but we don't. And so it just inconveniences people for no benefit and for no reason. And that's just the way football fans get treated in Scotland. And I mean, I've heard all the arguments about how this is the only country in Europe where you can actually go to the game and buy a beer. You can go to every other sporting event and get as pissed out of your nut as you want. And you can't buy a beer at a football match. I mean, honestly, it's like it's all football fans are second-rate citizens, not just us. We just happen to be the ones that are winning things right now and way into the future, hopefully. And so it feels bad for us, but I just think football fans in general are treated abysmally here in Scotland and in Glasgow in particular. It's ridiculous.
Well, definitely looking over from Ireland, I mean, from my perspective, and obviously following Glasgow Celtic as closely as I do, it's just ridiculous. The lack of... what would you say facilities there are there for football cities or football supporters in a city like Glasgow, which has two huge football clubs, that have one of the best consistent attendances in Europe. And yet on the occasion where Celtic want to celebrate their title win, there's absolutely nothing done to facilitate that happening. And it's just, it looks farcical, to be quite honest. It looks ridiculous from my perspective. So Joe, what's your view on Saturday's happenings and the isolated incidents, which, to be fair, were isolated? How did you view the whole situation?
It's all very routine. It's the same story every year. If you dug out the stories from last year, they'd be very similar. A couple of variables get changed, and Celtic don't want to know about it. Glasgow City Council don't want to know about it. And it's just a case of pass the buck. I don't know if there's anyone out there that can bang some heads together and get things arranged for whichever team wins the league next season, whether it's us or some other club. But I'm sure this week you'll find incredible celebrations in Croydon for Crystal Palace, in Liverpool for Liverpool, and you'll see clips here and there around Europe of city councils absolutely delighted that some acclaim, some attention has been brought to their city by one of their football clubs. I suspect the Crystal Palace celebrations will be absolutely wild. I think there might be some people drinking alcohol, there might be some pyro there, and there might be some recreational drug use, and I don't think anyone will really bother about it. I don't think the Croydon Advertiser or the South London News will be getting all upset about it and all high and mighty, but it's all very predictable, and it's equally predictable that Glasgow City Council are telling the Glasgow Times or the Evening Times that they're going to arrange talks with Celtic. I'm pretty certain that happened last year as well. And the old never again, blah, blah, blah. It's a strange story. It's a boring story. I think Celtic fans are getting a bit of fatigue for the Trongate. The attitude of the council and timing a VE parade on the morning of it, that galvanised a lot of supporters. If that hadn't happened, there'd have been less supporters there. So I don't see any leadership from the council. I certainly don't see any leadership from Celtic. And if we win the league next season, I think we could be having the exact same discussion. Somebody needs to come up with an idea that makes money for Glasgow City Council and makes money for Celtic. If there's coin in it, then they'll be jumping up and down. But at the minute, there's nobody with any vision and nobody's got any commercial nous on it. So it's unfortunate. And as I said, last month, Newcastle fans had the time of their life when they won a trophy. The Newcastle Council have been waiting 70 years to put on some sort of parade and they went to town with it. We don't expect the same endeavours from Glasgow City Council, but some bins in Portaloos would be a start. But I suspect we'll be having a similar discussion next year, unfortunately. Unfortunately, in terms of celebrations, but fingers crossed Celtic are winning 5 in a row this time next year.
Fingers crossed, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure no doubt we'll be back here this time next year, and we'll probably, nothing will have been done, and we'll be having the same conversations with regards to what goes on in the Tromgate, if it's around the Tromgate next year. So, look, we'll move on from that. I mean, it was a good point of discussion in the run-up to Saturday. But I think in the end, it passed off without too much incident, which we knew and which we expected. And to be fair, I think, and everybody said it, I think the whole thing was just set up to make Celtic fans look bad. That was really, you know, the crux of it. So we'll move on to our next point for this evening's podcast, and that is thanks for the memories, Barry. It was announced yesterday evening that Barry Ferguson was departing Ibrox in the aftermath of his fantastic stint as interim manager. Now, I say fantastic in that he provided brilliant entertainment for us Celtic fans. He was absolutely comedy gold throughout the whole short tenure that he had. James, you said you made a great point where you said that the win over Celtic would be the highlight of his whole tenure as manager at Ibrox. I don't think any of us imagined it would be as farcical as it got at times, and it would be as ridiculous as it got at times. Because let's be honest about it, it got absolutely nuts on occasion. And even the way he departed on Saturday, his final game against Hibs, still couldn't pull the win out of the bag. Obviously, we'll touch on the goal that was disallowed. And fair enough, I think when you look at the replays on that, they have a case. I don't know if that was karma after what happened to us at Easter Road. I don't know, but I mean, the fact that Hugh Dallas was on the VAR and he denied his favourite team a goal, which was, I don't know. I've seen the angles that I've seen, it looked like it was over the line. But it may have been the sunlight, the shadow, and whatever else, you don't know for sure. But it has generated a lot of controversy anyway, but what difference? I mean, it doesn't really mean anything in the broader scheme of things, whether they had won, drawn or lost that game. It changes nothing. So, but James, reminisce about your best memories of Barry and tell us, you know, what he did that amused you so much over the period of the time that he was there.
These are great days for us. These are great days for our fans. I think a lot of people in their support genuinely believed all that the banter years are over stuff. Nowhere. We are nowhere near the end of the banter years. This is a series that's going to go on and on for another 10 more seasons. Nothing they did there makes any sense to me. It was an appointment that made... Look, we all joked about it, right? We joked about it at the start of the season. We'll probably end the season with Barry Ferguson and Doug and all that. We all had a good laugh about it. None of us thought it would happen. None of us believed it would happen. And yet, the minute Clermont got sacked, and you realised that they were only going to appoint somebody permanently until this fake over takeover, whatever it is, unravels or comes together, there was a certain inevitability about it being Ferguson. You knew it was going to be him and some combination of the Goon Squad. It was only a matter of which names would be sat around the table. I was only surprised that John Der Bomber Brown wasn't one of them at the time. Okay, him in a minute, but later on. But I was only surprised that he wasn't one of them, because that I had that feel about it right from the start. It was a joke. It was a joke appointment, and it's ended as a joke. It's ended as a complete farce. And there you've got Keith Jackson writing this morning one of the most absolutely ridiculous articles that even he's ever written, which was half was a love letter to Ferguson and half was a warning to the board of appointing Dario Ancelotti. Jackson seems to be labouring under the misconception that the Americans are already running the club. If they are already running the club, I would like to know what the mechanism by which they're doing it is, since they don't own a single share. They don't have a single seat on the board. But yet, their guys are allegedly out there negotiating with managers and being on the phone call with Ferguson and telling him he's not getting the gig. Maybe it's just me who thinks they're running an awful lot like a club, which has its permanent board in place and is acting accordingly. Maybe it's just me. But that, the whole thing is nuts. Jackson's article this morning was nuts. Barry will feel he earned it, and it's hard to argue with him. Well, it's actually easy to argue with him. If he thinks he earned it with, what, five wins and 17 games, then he's kidding himself on. He's only kidding himself on. No one else believes this. Literally no one else. And I just thought that the whole thing was hilarious. I thought some of his press interviews were hilarious. His foot stamping anger last weekend after he knew he wasn't going to be the manager. Whatever was discussed between him and Thelwell or whoever it was that he sat and had the chat with, he was told at that point, I think you're not getting it. And you can't seriously believe that we would ever give it to you. And I think that the Ancelotti story unnerved him a lot, because I think he must have came away from that meeting expecting that it would be a serious person that got the job and it would be a serious appointment and not some rookie who's got a famous star, which is basically all that amounts to. And he, when he gave the press conference at the end of last week, he sounded like genuinely pissed off. If I was a foreign coach, me and my coaching staff were foreign, we'd have got more respect. Now, if you'd have won more games, you'd have got more respect. You're whinging little bitch. That's the fact of it. You'd have won more games, you'd have got more respect. None of David, your nationality or anything. But that was genuine anger at finding out that they had spoken to a rookie and they were thinking of appointing this guy on the basis of, oh, it seems to me he's a famous setting name and having followed his dad but quite a lot. So, I mean, it ended in the kind of note that I thought it would, with Ferguson expressing his disappointment about, oh, I did my best and I was really proud. And what is it Sean Connery says in The Rock? Losers always whine about giving their best. Exactly. That's all it was. And Terry Jackson this morning, it was, oh, he'll feel crushed. And I hope he feels crushed. I hope he does feel crushed. It's hard to muster even the slightest shred of sympathy for Ferguson or any of them. It's turned out that the Celtic Park victory was, as I thought it would be, the high point in his career. That's it. Because it was only ever going to go two ways, right? He was going to go to Celtic Park and beat Brendan and think, I've got a chance now. I'm in the driving seat. I'm going to get this. And then at the end, no get it. And be scratching your head and saying, well, why didn't they think I was good enough? Because you're not good enough, but okay. But he'll always wonder. But I did that. There's no much Mera could have done to beat him. I beat Mourinho. I'd surely deserved it. And there was that side of the case. You know, you don't get the job and you spend the rest of your life greeting about not getting the job. Or you get the job, which ends even worse for you. Because the fans who gave him the standing ovation and cheered him on the weekend, boo him out of the stadium. When he gets sacked after 6 months or 7 months, which was the inevitable outcome for a guy who won, six games in 17. I mean, there was never a happy ending for him. There was never a happy ending. And you know what? You could almost... It's almost like the win at Park Kid was a kind of perfect moment, because you knew that was going to screw him up. That was going to be what was in his seat forever. But I beat Brendan Rodgers. Why didn't I get it? Some have got it and some ain't, mate. That's the simple fact of it. It's got nothing to do with your name and nothing to do with your nationality. You're a clown. And it ended, the clown show ended the way we always thought it would, with some laughter and some tears. But we weren't shedding any of the tears. We're still laughing. Mental.
Yeah, the clown car departed the building all right with all the clowns in it. But I kind of said that in you know, when he's when Barry Ferguson is a decrepit old fart, he'll end up doing the rounds of the Orange Lodges and going on about that win against Celtic. So I'll pass over to Joe and get Joe's thoughts on it. And Joe, what were your fondest memories of Barry and his role as interim Ibrox manager?
First of all, it's frustrating that he has a win against Celtic on his CV, but that was painful, that was annoying, but he can hang on to that. And every time a new manager dies a death at Ibrox, that's going to be brought up. That beating Brendan Rodgers and winning away to Fenerbahce, that's his calling card. He barely needs to send a WhatsApp to his messengers and they'll be on the case. And the way it's been handled, that club now has, without question, the angriest ambassador in world football. He is absolutely fizzing. He does not like this one bit. The way he reacted, I mean, the Ancelotti story was just such a fabrication. I mean, it came from Spanish sources. Some Italians picked up on it. And the Scottish media outlets, they just went to town on it. They were spitting out stories every hour about how fantastic Davide Ancelotti was going to be, all the great connections he had. Barry Ferguson read all that and believed it all. Keith really should have said, don't worry about it, Barry, it's a lot of nonsense. I've seen this before plenty of times. But before the Dundee United game, he was very, very, very angry. The foreigner stuff and various other things. So it's an ongoing circus. It was good to see him getting let down. It was interesting the way they done it on Sunday afternoon. The whole lot of them are out, except Sammy, the Moroccan coach, he's been retained. He's in a 3-year contract. So there's going to be a lot of competition back at BBC Scotland next season. That's Dodds, McCann and Alec Ray all in contention for places there. The fakeover takeover is nowhere closer than it was 3 months ago when Keith revealed his world exclusive that talks at an advanced stage. The season's finished every passing day. I think their last hope is that they're going to overstage Celtic at the weekend by announcing a top manager or the takeover. I suspect that's not going to happen. And then once the cup final's over with, it starts getting into international territory. The clock's ticking quickly. I think they're back training on June the 23rd. We're probably back a week later than that. So it's fun in games. The banter years roll on forever and a day. There's no real changes on things. Barry Ferguson's come in. Barry Ferguson's gone. Barry Ferguson will probably come back. You're just left with me and James to keep the show on the road. I'm not sure if James is sound as that. Oh, welcome back, Eric.
Oh, yeah,
it's your turn, Eric, this week.
Heavy, heavy thunder showers outside at the moment and lightning. So I think it's hit my. I'm the one who's having internet problems this time around. Yeah, there's very severe thunderstorms outside at the moment here in Ireland. So we're getting a bit of a hammering there. So I think there was a massive crash of thunder and lightning there. I think it knocked out the internet signal there for a couple of minutes. So, but I'm back. If I get knocked out again, at least you know why. In relation to John Bomber Brown, let's move on to him and have a chat about his rant during the game on Saturday after the goal was disallowed on Rangers TV. I'll pass over to James for that one. That was pretty hilarious.
I've actually got a piece going up about that. I think it's 7:30. It's already finished and ready to go. And the SFA are opening an investigation into it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the SFA are wrong to do that. I'm not going to say that the guy doesn't deserve it because he does. The comments were utterly ridiculous. And even his co-hosts on the show were like, you can't say that. Well, I'm saying it. I don't care. I'm saying it. Right. So fair enough. You know, he knows what he's doing. He's dug himself a hole. I'm not going to say the rank to deal with it, but it is kind of hilarious that we're only a few weeks on for a game in which things got thrown at our players. Their fans had a shocking banner that suggested our fans deserved to be shot. And the SFA has not heard a single word about it. It's not opened any form of inquiry or investigation into it. But they're going to investigate a guy commenting on the club's in-house TV channel to the club's own fans. I think it's pretty... It's not even the fact that it's a stupid thing for them to have done, right? As I say, he deserves it. He's a clown. Now, you can't say stuff like that and expect to get away with it. But he's not the first person at that club to say stuff like that and get away with it. You've got the board of directors releasing statements about referees and how certain refs shouldn't referee their games. And they've done it in sneaky ways and all. And they've broadcast to the fan media that this is the line we should be pushing. And we want him out and we want him gone. And him in this case, him in that case, only turns out now to be the guy who's ahead of referees. So that didn't exactly work too well for them. But they got away with that. Essentially, they got away with that. There were no sanctions against the club for that. I remember when Steven Gerrard became manager. And I think it was after his first or second game, he was already ranting about SFA conspiracies against the club. And nobody did that single thing about that. There was no investigation in that. So it's a wee bit like how the union brats must feel about getting singled out for the banner a couple of weeks ago when they've produced much worse in the past and got away with them. And it looks ludicrous when they haven't even opened an investigation into objects getting thrown at players at our club. They're going to open an investigation into this. It's absolute tokenism. It's pathetic. It just looks pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Do you feel, though, that he has do you feel they have a legitimate point with regards to the goal being disallowed? Do you think it was a goal?
That's a goal. Of course it's a goal. It's definitely a goal. But that, again, feeds into the general thing. All of a sudden, the Scottish football has realised that VAR, our version of VAR, is subpar shite. But we've known our version of VAR is subpar shite for weeks and months and almost since it was introduced. I don't know how many disallowed Celtic goals there have been. I don't know how many decisions that we gave us offsides that we didn't get or whatever, right? All because our VAR system is subpar shite. But nobody cared when it was us. And I really genuinely don't know what all the furore is about this. Because although it's a goal, I think it's a goal. It's a meaningless goal in a meaningless game anyway. I mean, it's not like it would have got Barry the job had it counted. It's not like it would have changed the league table in any significant way had it counted. I don't even think it would have denied Hibs third place. Am I right? It wouldn't even have made any difference to them. So it's a lot of fury and noise about nothing very much. And it's almost as if Scottish football has just realised that our system is crap. I mean, the Hunts are stamping their feet about this and they're giving it big licks about we need to have something done and we need to have goal line technology. Do you know what? Goal line technology, brilliant. Bring in goal line technology. But somebody has to pay for goal line technology. Somebody's got to write a cheque and pay for it. So if they're volunteering to do that, then great. They can do Scottish football a favour. They'll be doing Scottish football a favour. Always will be done a favour if they do it. I think there are a lot of clubs who, if they were asked to pay a bit extra for VAR, that would be the breaking point for them, and some of them would say, well, no interest in paying another penny towards VAR, let alone pay Mayor. So I think they're on dangerous ground there if they're banging the drum for a mere expensive version, because I really don't think there's a stomach for it anywhere in Scottish football. It's a crap system we've got. It really is. But I would rather abolish it than pay any extra money for it. Right now, it just doesn't seem worth having the state as. It's pretty dreadful. But we all knew this. This isn't just something that's happened this weekend. We all knew it. So I genuinely don't know why they're all getting so furious and pissed off about it. It looks like a fairly straightforward decision. But as Joe says, we're talking here about Andrew Dallas. Andrew Dallas isn't chopping goals off. That they've legitimate goals off because he's got an anti-club bias. That's just preposterous. I mean, if anybody deserves to sue John Brown, it's him. Because that is so idiotic a claim that he should sue for it. I mean, really, it's nuts. Andrew Dallas biased against the club from Ibrox. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a bit ironic, all right, that Andrew Dallas would be biased against that club. It looks like we've been joined by one of our fellow bloggers this evening from Bourne Celtic. I don't know if that's him, but he's coming up there in the comments. I think it's Paddy Sinat, good media James. So Joe, what was your take on the whole John Bomber Brown meltdown?
First of all, it wasn't a goal. There's no evidence whatsoever that the ball crossed the line. And after Raska had a shot at goal, Bashiri was racing back to try and hook it off the line, and he got pushed with two hands by Raska. So it's trivial, it's a nonsense, and it's typical of them. It's a nice deflection. But Bomber Brown is from the same ilk as Barry Ferguson. They feed off the paranoia of their supporters and they throw it back. They pour flames on it. So it's entirely predictable. It was interesting that Tom, commentator, he told them to pipe down, but Brown decided to double down rather than pipe down. The way it's played out is interesting because Stephen McGowan, not for the first time and certainly not for the last time, he's got the inside scoop from the SFA. How does he manage that, Stephen McGowan? Time after time, when it's the SFA and the SPFL, he gets the story. But there's no charges against John Brown. The SFA are looking into it. So that sounds like a little deflection. We'll pretend that we're doing something and hopefully it's forgotten about next week. But just based on that report from Stephen McGowan that the SFA are looking into it, we got a statement out of Statement FC, so that's playing into the panto. But VAR in Scotland is probably quite similar to various other countries. It's just a case that our VAR officials are horrendous. We had the misfortune of David Dickinson on Saturday. David Dickinson could be doing VAR on a few of our matches next season. The guy's not got a clue. No, the guy was out to chop 10 minutes at least of any Celtic match. VAR needs improved, but nobody's interested because Willie Collum is doing his VAR review. Willie Collum has brought accountability to refereeing issues in Scotland. That was a comment from Michael Nicholson at the last AGM. Some folk are very easily pleased. Every week, clubs are up in arms, supporters are complaining. Dundee have had horrendous decisions, and it's possibly resulted in Tony Docherty, contributed towards Tony Docherty getting sacked today, and that's partly due to VAR. So VAR isn't the problem, the officials are the problem, but Willie Collum is far too interested in his own media profile, putting himself forward as a good guy, when he's got horrendous guys like Dallas, Muir, who knows if he's going to come back, Greg Aitken's doing the cup final next week. Don Robertson will referee the match. Don Robertson's got a long track record of letting players boot lumps out of Celtic players. In Ange's first season, guy at Dundee United had a retrospective red card. A couple of weeks later, a guy at Allo had a retrospective red card for assaults on Celtic players. So refereeing's horrendous. It'll be interesting. I suspect the comments from the SFA and the retaliatory statement from Ibrox today is just playing to the gallery, and by this time next week it'll be forgotten about, and Nudge, nudge. What a lad Bomber is. Says it what it's like. He's a true bear. So the refereeing problems will continue next season. The Celtic party in the Trongate will probably continue next season, etc., etc., because nobody really cares in Scottish football. It's the same script that just goes round in circles. And our concern got to be Greg Aitken on VAR on Saturday at Hampden, and Don Robertson letting anything go before he decides to pull out a yellow card. So the clubs are the SFA, the clubs are the SPFL. They know the costs involved. They can get things done. They choose not to, and it's just the circle continues. There's nothing particularly fresh about it, other than Bomber Brown's an ambassador, and he'll soon be joined by an equally angry ambassador in Barry Ferguson.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just going to move on from the subject of, you know, the SFA and the SFA being corrupt, because I think we all know that at this point in time. And for John Bomber Brown to confirm it is kind of ironic when you think about it. So what I'm going to move on to is the Green Brigade and the banner. Well, you wouldn't call it a banner, but the picture that they had out on Saturday of Michael Nicholson. And I'm going to go, I suppose, reference Hugh Keevan's article on Sunday, where he went back to the the game against Hibs, and he brought up the banner that they had out, where they stated that the board was never out of pocket, and that, you know, basically they were, you know, making the point that Celtic, the club, were continuously taking money from the fans, no issues with doing that. And Keevan's decided to call it out in a very crass manner on Sunday, and basically saying that, you know, asking the question, what do we want? So James, what's your view on it?
Well, I didn't read that certain person's article, so I don't actually know what it was that he said. But if you've got it right, are you suggesting that he criticised the Green Brigade or the club?
He criticised the Green Brigade.
Well, I wonder if perhaps he's not...
The fans in general.
Perhaps I wonder if perhaps he's not kind of stumbled onto something for once that makes sense. It's dead easy, right? It's dead easy to get the board a kick in for everything, right? I think season ticket price increases beyond a certain point are indefensible. I think the rising price of tickets for games in general is pretty indefensible. But we're in a very hard football environment here, and we don't have a lot of options. They're really only, unless you've got American sugar daddies funding everything and pouring money into the black hole and doing as Dave King suggests and cutting season ticket prices by 40% to reward the loyalty of the fans. Although I do wonder if he passed that particular piece of business advice onto them before he tried to get them involved. I mean, short of doing something like that, right? Short of having sugar daddies who are going to take up any shortfall in funds, I do wonder what a lot of fans expect of a club today in that regard. Because if they take in less money, then we can spend less money. It's that simple. And the more money they can make, the more money we can spend. And I know HMRC gets an awful lot of our money, and shouldn't he? But it is an unescapable situation that we're in. We don't have a lot of money as a football club playing in Scotland. And I'm very proud of the fact that we as the fans have paid for everything. Paid for all of it. Every time we go to Celtic Park, every time I go to Celtic Park, I'm very proud walking up the Celtic Way, because that's us. We did that. The ones you said, that, you know, that I hate it when the media refers to our billionaire owner in the EU, our billionaire owner in Ireland, as if he funds this whole thing. He doesn't. I don't think he's put a single penny out of the club short of buying his original tranche of shares. There's talk that maybe he paid the salary for Brendan Rodgers the first time he's here, and that maybe he's paying it this time around. I have no idea. But I would be very surprised if that was true. As far as I can see, he doesn't spend any money. But that's no a bad thing, because you don't want to ever be dependent on that guy's money or anybody else's money. Celtic's funded by us. And unfortunately, that means that we pay a higher ticket price than a lot of other clubs. That's where our success is built on. And it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue with a changing economic situation where bills are higher than they've ever been, utility prices are higher than they've ever been, and for businesses, maybe even more so than individuals. And it has to be paid for by somebody. And we've paid the bill. We've always paid the bills. And that's how it should be. And I really don't have any problem with it. It's no nice to find out that ticket prices keep on going up. But we can't, on the one hand, say that Maeda should get a higher salary and that we should push the boat out to keep Brendan and then expect somebody else to pay for it. We need to pay for it. We've paid for everything so far. So I don't know. Maybe Keevans is on to something for once. The Green Brigade are right, but highlight a trend that is getting ridiculous, and it'll get to the point where it is absolutely indefensible. I read something about England, that the FA Cup final this year was the first time in British football where ticket prices were subjected to the fluctuation. What do you call it? There's a technical name for it. I couldn't remember it in the pub all night, but somebody else remembered it. But basically, it's like when you buy airline tickets. If you want to buy airline tickets for a European game, right, and you go on the morning of the draw, all that will happen over the course of the day is the price will just go up and up and up and up and up. Supply and demand, right? And for the first time ever, FA Cup ticket prices were on sale on that principle, that if you're last in, you will pay the highest price for them. And there was a guy talking about how he paid $3,000 to get two of them. I hope he was a Palace fan. I hope he thought it was worth it, because that's mental. But that's where we're headed, I think, unless we put the brakes on it. And that's a shocking situation if it is. That should never be allowed to happen. But steadily we're getting it. We're getting to a place where that will happen. That just will not be acceptable at all. It's hard. It's hard.
Sorry, James, lost you there. The signal is acting up.
It's one of the few areas. It's one of the few places where I've got a sympathy for the board situation and for the situation we find ourselves in as a club. It's so dynamic. That's it. That's what it's called.
Yeah. Warren Celtic is not agreeing with you anyway. They're saying get you off. He's saying get Forrest off straight red for praising Keevans. What the banner actually said was Celtic PLC, also always out of touch, never out of pocket. And what Keevans actually said was that he said that fans are always looking for Celtic to break the bank when it comes to signing players, which is not true, because we never break the bank. We never finish a transfer window without having a transfer surplus. I mean, the last transfer window, even though we broke the transfer record, we still had a surplus of £6 million coming off the back of player sales that we had in that window. So for Keevans to say that fans are always looking for the club never breaks the bank when it comes to player signings, because they never finish a transfer window without a surplus. And he's basically attacking the fans and saying that, we shouldn't be demanding more in terms of player transfers, that we should put up and shut up, and that the transfer of Arnie Ingles was a record breaker. So because it was a record breaker, we broke the bank. We didn't. We all know that. So what's your view on it, Joe?
Firstly, same as last week, I couldn't care less what Keevan says. So what? An old man rattling about making noises, looking for attention. Who cares? In terms of the issue, Celtic have got no need to raise ticket prices, absolutely no need at all. They make, what, 20 million profit. They're sitting in 60, 70, 80 million pounds in the bank. There's no need to put season ticket price up 5%. I mind reading a while ago, Celtic could quite easily stick £100 before Christmas in each season ticket holder's bank account. That would cost the club, as the Celtic are swimming in money. They've got plenty of it. That money comes from season tickets, it comes from fans buying Adidas kit, and it comes from UEFA. because sponsors want associates. If the games are played at empty stadiums, there wouldn't be too much interest in Celtic, but the Celtic support makes things interesting at Celtic Park, and it's the supporters that drive everything. So I've got sympathy with the Green Brigade, but it's no win because the board know their position. They can push the boat out. They can tweak things. They can always keep increasing the prices. But it's a combination of a few things. The season ticket, the Newcastle friendly, the lack of tickets to the cup final, etc., etc. So, again, it's as a... I was interested. Roger spoke after the game about the great bond between the team, the players and the supporters. But previously I had mentioned the Trinity when he first came in, about the whole club working together. And that was the executive, the fans and the players. And there's one part missing in that just now. I don't know how it's going to be solved. I'm not too interested at all about what Hugh Keevans did, but the relations that they were very good, empathy, no sympathy, nothing in common with the supporters. It's not healthy, but as the trophies keep piling up, everything's fine. So it's an awkward one. We'll see how it goes, but it's not healthy overall, the relationship, the feelings. There's, and that was typified by the Michael Nicholson banner even. I don't think it'll bother him the slightest, but for a club enjoying so much success, there's quite a lot of issues. There's plenty of happy clappers out there, plenty of folk that just wallow in it and think everything is going fantastic. Wave the little green and white flag that probably costs about 50 pence to manufacture and 50 pence to put in place on Saturday morning. But it's typical of many things, but as long as the team keeps on winning, most people are happy, and fingers crossed that will continue this weekend.
Okay, well, I think probably one of the biggest issues that the fan base in general doesn't or isn't happy with, doesn't like or isn't happy with, is the fact that the board just will not. There is no fan engagement. They just will not engage with fans. And there's no communication between the board and the fan base. And they're very happy to give all the plaudits or take all the plaudits for the Green Brigade when the Green Brigade do good things and put up good TIFOs and all that kind of stuff. They're very happy to take the plaudits. But when the Green Brigade do something that they don't agree with, they're very quick to shut it down. And you can't have it both ways. You have to be able to take that little bit of criticism when it comes your way. There's some people out there who don't want to criticize the board at all, as Joe refers to them as happy clappers. And that's a fact. They don't. They're happy. They're happy to win trebles season in, season out. And we all are. There's no two ways about it. What we really want, though, is investment to take us further in Europe. And that's a discussion for another day. But we also want fan engagement. And there is no fan engagement. It would be great to have a fan representative on the board. And that would really show that the club is willing to show some sort of ambition to engage with fans. And I think the big problem there is that they just don't want to. And they just won't. And it won't change. I don't think it'll change. Do you think it'll change, James?
God. It's the one problem with success, isn't it? It's the one problem we've been, as good as we've been in the last couple of years, the last 14 or 15 years. When you're winning everything, nobody wants to rock the boat too much. And there's a lot of people who genuinely don't think there are any problems anyway. Because you see the trophies piling up and the money in the bank and think, well, we're the absolute perfect model, where we're run club, and in some ways we are. And I'm sympathetic to that view. But all three of us know that the summer two seasons ago was a shit show. The summer last season was a farce up until the last week. And it was a farce in particular because it took them to the last week to do business that was probably already three quarters of the way done, and all they had to do was push the button, and they decided, for PR reasons or whatever, to deprive the manager of his players when he needed them, when he wanted them, and leave it to the last day for a bit of box office. And I don't know what the hell they were even thinking about in January. That was a disgrace. Utter disgrace to sell your star striker and no replace him. absolute farce. So we know it's not a perfectly well-run club, but you get guys like us who have an issue with that stuff. The Green Brigade, I have never, ever, ever seen them utter a word in any of their statements in defence of the team on the pitch and making the team on the pitch stronger. They genuinely don't seem to have any problem with the way we're running in that regard. If they do, I've never heard them express it. Right, and it's the same with our brethren across the stadium, the boys, who also have never issued a single word about the weakening of the squad or the manager's position or the manager being undermined or any of the things that we talk about all the time. But this is part of the problem, you see. You've got fan groups who've got their agendas. You've got guys like us who've got our own concerns and things that we worry about, that I'm sure there are other guys on other sites who have got their own issues and their own concerns. Maybe some of them are a bit more worried about the youth academy than some of us are. Most of us worry about that. But maybe the other ones are worried about, you know, whatever it is, right? But all the various issues, none of them can call it. They kind of quite call this into a big picture type, this is a badly run club. Because unfortunately, in some ways, it's not a badly run club at all. It's a very well-run club. And so getting fans to agree that action needs to be taken and something needs to be done is going to be very, very difficult, because a lot of fans don't believe there is anything that needs to be done. And even those who do think things need to be done have got different priorities than what we think those things are. We're just victims of success. If the club was absolutely stinking in the state the mob across the city are in, we'd be hollering for blood every week and we would all be unified on the targets that we want to get ready and the things that we want to see done. But we're not. We're winning all the time. So a lot of issues are like floating under the radar and they're not being talked about and they're not being discussed, and the club couldn't care less. And at a time like this, the club can basically ignore supporters whenever they want, because they're saying, well, look, we're doing a good job, so quit complaining, sit and shut up. Pay your money, sit down, shut up.
Yeah, but I think one of the points I made today in an article was that we've all talked about complacency at one point or another. And it's easy for the board to currently be complacent because there isn't any challenge coming from across the city. And when we look at the fact that the only time that we saw a challenge come from across the city, we imploded as a club. And when this board was put under pressure, I think that's the concern overall of Celtic fans that worry about the board. They worry that if this board is put under real pressure from across the city, or, which would be lovely, from somewhere else, that they will not be able to handle that pressure, or they will wilt under that pressure, like they did in the 2020-21 season, the COVID season. I mean, that was an implosion of spectacular proportions. So much so that the CEO at the time fell on his sword in an act of self-sacrifice, which we all know was a ruse because he's back in the building and was back in the building only 18 months later. So I think if you look at the average fan worries that complacency will be our biggest enemy and that complacency will be the cause of us getting into trouble, as it did. It was expected we'd walk 10 in a row a few years ago, and that certainly didn't happen. I don't think in the short term the Americans are going to get their act together and challenge us, but in the long term they might. And we have to hope that our board is capable of withstanding whatever challenge comes from Ibrox when it does come. And if it does come, is it just going to be a case of keeping them at arm's length, or are they going to pull away from them? So I think that's the big worry, is complacency. I know I'm repeating myself in that regard, but that is it. What do you think, Joe? Do you think they're too complacent because there is no challenge?
There is a challenge, and the challenge is called Europe. We've saw Bruges this season, what they can do. We've seen PSV Eindhoven. So the challenge is out there, but there's an easier challenge, and they'll always take the easier option. So the easier option is to finish ahead of their friends across the city. And again, as Jim says, That satisfies 70, 80, 90% of Celtic supporters. And there might be a few bullshit because that say, "What? Why don't we try and do what Bruges do? What? Why don't we? Why shouldn't we be last 16? What? We should be in the Champions League every season. I reckon 3 seasons out of 5 we should be reaching the last 16. We might reach a semi-final one day, but we saw that. Rub our hands. Let's get rid of that pest, Kyogo, and we'll try and get this Danish guy, Chris Garden. If we don't get him now, we'll try and get him in the summer. And by the summer, I mean the 31st of August. So that's complacency. That's the attitude. This is the board that in December 2021 decided we'll need to have a managerial review. Came to kick Celtic, and then it took them over 100 days to come up with Ange Postecoglou. In reference to the investment, a few comments about it. If the club was going to rebuild the main stand, there wouldn't be too many complaints about increased prices and the Adidas deals, the Adidas Cup, paying for a Champions League playoff tie. Folk would be fully on board with that. It would look fantastic. By we've no idea what the club's plans are. Every now and then somebody will tell you, or they're looking into options for the South Stand, they're going to redevelop that. It's not happening. Barrafield, there's £10 million, but why do we build Barrafield when we're playing? A team are both playing on artificial pitches at Hamilton and the Airdrie. So if there was some sort of plan, if the club told us what they were doing, then there'd be some buy-in. But it's all tokenism. They've got one supporters liaison officer for 50,000 season ticket holders and maybe 50,000 folk that they hold fan forum becoming two-way. It's go along, tick the box, smile, tell the supporters are the best in the world. As cynical as ever, there's no sign of movement, there's no sign of engagement, there's no sign of life, and I don't see much changing.
Okay, James, quick word on Michael Gannon's article about, since Joe was touching on the subject of the stadium, you know, expansion. Michael Gannon's article there on Ibrox expanding and Celtic Park expanding, that was an awful lot of pie in the sky, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was an odd one. I've heard a few things about Michael Gannon. I've heard that he's one of the go-to guys for people at Celtic if they want to like leak information or whatever, or get to test the water on some mad idea. And I sincerely hope that in this case, his writing does not reflect the thinking inside Celtic Park. Because he did a piece on why the Americans will want to expand Ibrox and why the Celtic directors don't want to expand Celtic Park. I thought his piece on the other side of the city, I thought the part of it that dealt with them was pretty ludicrous. It doesn't seem like that. I mean, okay, they want to increase revenues and all that stuff, right? Fair enough, right? But to me, there's an awful lot of, we want a stadium as big as theirs. And it doesn't really matter if it costs a fortune and doesn't make a whole lot of money. They just want the bragging rights on how they've got the biggest stadium. And he seems to have bought into that completely, and he seems to think that's a legitimate reason to do it. But the Americans, I think, will take a slightly different view. He's talked about how the changes at Leeds and the stadium expansion at Leeds is a consequence of the Americans in big picture thinking, and that's what they'll bring the Ibrox on. But the truth is, the Leeds Stadium holds, 36,000? It's like tiny compared to... A club of that stature should not have a stadium that small. Fair enough, right? It's basically a one-club city. And they want to expand the stadium. In fact, their stadium expansion isn't even going to bring it up to the level of Celtic Park in terms of attendance. But they're adding 20,000 seats because that will generate more money, and it will. And a Premier League club needs a stadium that size. And so the investment will pay for itself, in a sense, like in reasonably short order. Even then, the costs are going to be pretty eye-watering. And I know that the media doesn't like talking about the technical detail of stuff. They're talking about a rebuild on a par with what Liverpool did at Anfield. And I think the cost of that was something like £60 million, which is crazy. Leeds have put, I think what they've done is they've put a £10 million bond aside for it. But if you actually read the small print of that, the Leeds £10 million was for the initial stage to get planning permission and to do the feasibility study. And they bring in the engineers and all that to basically plan how they're going to do it. But that's not any part of the rebuild. That £10 million is not going to play any part in the rebuild. And it looks likely that in order to do the rebuild on the scale that they're talking about, that they'll need to borrow the money. And again, that will be money that will be lumped onto the club's debt. Nobody wants to talk about that. But nobody wants to talk about whether the Americans would just come in and throw money at an expansion of Ibrox and who would pay for it. They seem to think the Americans would pay for it, but that's not how it's done. The Americans are probably going to have to borrow money to pay for the expansion of Leeds. And they always talk about how the NFL has got all these fantastic stadiums and the 49ers recently built a new stadium and all that. Well, again, I'm sorry that you don't know your details, guys, but in the US, a lot of stadium infrastructure and a lot of the stadiums themselves are built by the local government, by the state government. And they're usually built under threat of the whole franchise relocating somewhere else. So what will happen is they'll say, right now we're based in San Francisco, but there's no reason why we couldn't just base in San Diego. So San Francisco, how much are you willing to put towards this? And they inevitably will say, well, okay, we'll meet half the cost or whatever. And that's how it's done in the NFL. And the NFL itself will pay for a certain chunk of it. The club will pay a certain chunk of it. But local government will pay a certain chunk of it. And the rest is borrowed. Nobody wants to think about that in the context of Ibrox. So I don't even know what it would cost to bring Ibrox up to a 60,000 capacity, right? It would be a lot. It would be very expensive. You're not just talking about filling in the corners here. You're talking about lowering the pitch and all the stuff that they've talked about in the past. And the cost will be outrageous. To even attempt it is going to take a feasibility study and an engineer's report and all that stuff, and that's going to cost. And then you've got to try and do it. And you've also got to relocate your supporters, if it's the whole ground getting done, you've got to relocate the fans for at least a year and guarantee their season tickets. And even if you're only doing one stand, you've got to shut that one stand. And if that's not going to do the job, then again, you're going to go somewhere else. It's a colossal undertaking. And they're talking about it like it's a piece of cake that can be done over a summer. They should already know better than that. But Gannon's idea was that this was something they would inevitably do at Ibrox, right? For no reason other than Celtic would get a 60,000 stadium and they need a 60,000 stadium. But, I mean, so you get the costs. They'll work out the costs. They'll say, this is how much we'll need to pay for this. And this is a suggestion how we'll pay for it, right? And then the next part is the benefit. And if the benefit doesn't pay for itself in 10 or 15 years, if the uptick in income doesn't pay for itself in 10 or 15 years, then it's probably not worth doing. And because these guys tend to think in the immediate future and no very far along, right? They're not there to rebuild Ibrox into a elite level stadium or anything. They're just, there's a lot of people who have suggested that what these guys want to do is they want to come in, they want to put together a good business plan, they want to increase income and post a profit and then sell it again to somebody else. As if there's a few maniacs out there who want to buy a Scottish football club. But that might be a reasonable suggestion. So these guys are only thinking in the long term. They're not thinking about 10, 15, 20 years. They don't want it returning 10, 15, 20 years. So they'll look at it, and if it's going to cost too much and it won't pay for itself over that time frame, they'll just not do it. They'll just think, well, this isn't worth our while. There's other ways we can spend the money. But it was the second part of Gannon's article that was even more odd. And then the part that was really what I talk about was the second part of it, where he said that the Celtic board are happy to sit at 60,000 because of some mad belief that if we increased the stadium to 80,000 and thus made tickets available for everybody who wants them, that 20,000 people would just not buy season tickets anymore because they'd be guaranteed to go to any game they wanted to see. Which I think is a sort of a misunderstanding of why people buy season tickets in the first place. And part of that is, you know, if there's a group of you, you want to sit with your mates and you all want to, and you want to have a guarantee for every game, weigh your mates in your enemy section and you kind of make a wee homie and you get quite territorial about it and everything else. And I hope that that's not the prevailing attitude inside Celtic, that if they believe that if they increased the stadium capacity, that season ticket sales would fall instead of go up. Instead of selling 70,000 season tickets, you would sell 40,000. Because the other 40,000 people who might want to go to a European game would know that there will always be tickets available for it. And they would just stop buying season tickets altogether. I don't believe that's true. And I hope Celtic don't believe it's true. I would like to think that Celtic have done the exact same kind of feasibility study I was talking about, where they've looked at the cost of adding 20,000 seats and the length of time it would take to make that money back. And they're just like, well, we've got better things to spend money on. And the here and now, we've got better things. And it doesn't justify itself in the long term. We're not a part of the European Super League yet. We're never going to get the invite to England. Can we guarantee that we'll sell 80,000 season tickets? No. If things go wrong at the club in some way and Rodgers leaves and a couple of players go, and the more we cross the city get together, we may only sell 60,000. So adding another 20,000 might be a mistake. I'd like to think they've done a cost-benefit analysis rather than just believing in some mad theory that fans won't buy season tickets if there are more seats available. I don't think that's true. But the fact that Michael Gannon wrote it was slightly concerning, because I do know that he knows some of what goes on inside the heads of people at Celtic Park. I just hope that particular idea is not existing anywhere in there. I think it's mad.
Okay. Very interesting subject, all right, the stadium expansion. But we've gone a bit over time tonight, so I won't go to Joe for his views on it, because I think you've pretty much covered it there, James, in great detail. So, finally, what do we think is going to happen next Saturday? My own personal perspective on it is, I did an article this evening where I said, you know, Jimmy Thielen said that this was the last punch for his team. And I said, if it's the last punch for his team, then if they are to have any hope of beating Celtic, they're going to need to do the rope-a-dope for quite some time and then land a sucker punch, because that's the only possible way that they're going to actually get anything against us. And I think I'm basing this on the fact that we put out a second string last Wednesday, and I know a different game, there wasn't much writing on it, but the fact that we put out a second string last Wednesday and we still did what we did to them last Wednesday, does not augur well for them, and they are scarred since November 2nd and the 6-0 defeat that we did, or we inflicted on them that time. Jimmy Thielen says we don't fear Celtic. It's fine saying they don't fear us, but they do, in reality, because they know what we can do to them. So Willie Miller has said himself that he's worried about their chances in the Scottish Cup final. I think my view on it is that if we score the first goal, then floodgates will open again. But if it becomes a game where they decide to try and defend and sucker punch us, I think that may be the only chance they'll have. But I just don't, if we keep punching and rope it open, you know, I just don't think that they'll withstand it. Because they haven't been able to withstand it since last November. So, Joe, what's your view on it? How do you think it's going to play out on Saturday?
I hope it just goes entirely to form. I think Aberdeen are mentally scarred. Returning to Hampden would provide them with any happy memories. But there's bound to be some moments of tension and problems during the game. But hopefully the team plays to form and they can hit some purple patch in the match where they score three or four goals during a 15-minute spell of domination. That would be a fantastic end to the season. Unfortunately, there's only going to be 25,000 Celtic supporters inside Hampden, but complacency is our only problem. I don't think that's going to be a problem in a big match. You're more likely to slip up against St Mirren at home in the final day of the season than you are at Hampden. And again, Hampden used to be a horrendous ground, but We know Brendan Rodgers' record at Hampden, Brendan Rodgers' record in the Scottish Cup. So hopefully Celtic hit form and give the supporters a real good show and score 3-4 or perhaps more goals. But unless something absolutely bonkers happens, we saw bonkers things happen against Inverness, Cali Thistle, against Ross County, against Kilmarnock, against Hearts in the past, but I don't see that happening. I think Celtic will be well prepared and it should be another comfortable victory, another celebration on Saturday evening.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think that about sums it up. Definitely, it would be great to get a nice high scoring win against them again to wrap up the treble in that kind of fashion. James, your views?
One of the things I was doing in the game at the weekend was keeping an eye on what was happening at the other games. And the one that interested me was Dundee United Aberdeen. And Aberdeen have threw away a European qualification through the week, which I could not believe. Dundee United finished fourth. That's an incredible achievement for them, considering the start of the season they had, as well as Hibs finishing in third. Aberdeen fans must be gutted and furious and wondering what the hell keeps happening to their club. And that's, coming out of the game, I sort of had a half thought that it was not a great outcome for us, because now they have to go all in and try and win the cup if they're going to get to Europe. But then I thought, well, if you're going to go all in and you have to win the cup to get to Europe, then you've got to try and come and play football, and you've got to try and play attacking football. And if they do that, we'll just murder them. We'll just murder them. So they put themselves in a bit of a difficult position. And they're going to have a big problem on their hands if they try to attack us too much. I think Rodgers may have had an idea what his cup final team was before the game at the weekend. I think he definitely knows what it is now. I personally don't see any argument for keeping James Forrest at the starting 11, but it's just who you would drop for him. But I think for Aberdeen it'll be a long afternoon. They don't have many good options, and I think they're in for a really tough time. It's not like they're not going to enjoy it one bit, and I think we're going to enjoy it quite a lot. It's going to be one of those really good days.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you on that one, James. One of the points that I made in the article that I did this evening was that up until November 2nd, they scored 28 points in the league. The previous Wednesday to playing us on November 2nd, they had defeated the Ibrox side at Pittodrie in a convincing win. And they had put 9 points between them and the Ibrox side, and they were level on points with us. They had amassed 28 points from a possible 30 going into the game in November. In the following 28 games in the league, they've managed to amass 25 points. So if you look at the fact that they in the first 10 games, they scored 28 points, and in the following 28, they only managed to get 25. That's a spectacular implosion. And I said that Jim Goodwin must have felt that there was a bit of karma in how things finished up, you know, because he left Aberdeen 2 years ago in fairly poor circumstances to go to Dundee United, got relegated with Dundee United, brought them back up by winning the championship, and then finishes above his previous employers in his first season back in the Premiership with Dundee United. And, you know, there's a bit of karma there that he did that and Aberdeen lost out as a result of what he did. So, yeah, I mean, I think overall we'd expect Celtic to win fairly comfortably on Saturday. And that's based on the way things have gone with the games that we've played against Aberdeen right up until the end of the season. So we'll wrap it up there, guys, tonight. Again, apologies for the technical difficulties. The weather here in Ireland is definitely affecting the internet, so there's been major issues with that. We will endeavour 100% to get Joe's poor connection sorted out, because obviously it's the source of much joking and laughing, so we'll try and definitely get it sorted out. But one of the big things that has stood out tonight is we've consistently been over the 100 on the live stream, and that's very good. That shows growth, so we're really happy with that, folks. We will make sure that we get all the technical issues sorted. And keep following us, keep liking, keep subscribing, and keep following the Trinity Tims. And we will all see you next Monday again. I'm sure there'll be a few sore heads, but we'll all see you on Monday, and we'll all have a good long chat about what happened on the Saturday, and hopefully we'll be a world record 9 treble in the bag at that stage. So we'll all talk to you next week, guys. Take it easy and have a good one.